heart and soul of a nation, beckons the call. The voice of our forefathers heard in the distance.
A house divided against itself cannot stand.
To reclaim our honor.
Our soul. The challenges of a generation call out. Future generations hang in the balance. We choose liberty. This is the voice of a nation.
The nation.
And now, Malcolm.
Let's talk today, friends, about the American story, the plight we find ourselves in right at this very moment, and the status quo. And I think the big question I'd like you to ask yourselves, what kind of an America do we want on the other side of this pandemic? What does it look like? Well, it seems to me the American character has morphed into a society of snowflakes, a product of the media, drip, drip, drip. It's the sound, really, of your freedom being squeezed away in a new Green Deal that lines the pockets of the greedy few with green. They argue for unity, but unity is a total myth. It's a fairy tale. It's a cover for authoritarianism. You know, when these people speak of unity, what they really mean is submission. They don't really want freedom. These people want to be told how to think, how to act, how to be. You know, you think about it, the Democrats and Islam have much in common. Islam means submission, and Americans don't want that any more than they want to become a Venezuela. Islam and socialism, they're both on the same track, the same trajectory. Well, the character that once defined American was based on self-reliance and independence, born out of the turmoil of breaking the shackles of what was really a mild tyranny by an unconcerned British king thousands of miles away. 250 years ago, this is. Colonial Americans were British subjects for over 100 years, and 97% were satisfied with the status quo. Well, what happened? Well, we basically know the story here, right? Well, it all started with an unfair tea tax. Several years of turbulence followed that, which gave us the tale of British tea being tossed over the gunwales of merchant ships in that famous Boston Harbor, you remember. Well, it's an act that grew into a predictable British reaction, one that offended other Americans being required to house the king's soldiers, like it or not, than to British regulars trying to seize American arms and powder in Concord, Massachusetts, to actual shooting and people dying, to a bitter war. How did 3% of the population come to pledge their lives, their fortunes, and sacred honor to what appeared to be a no-win, hopeless cause? Well, in the end, the British king's army was defeated, his troops withdrawn, and a bunch of colonists gathered together to try to organize a movement, a government, if you will. Well, when you think about it in those terms, it was America's good fortune to have really far-seeing, intelligent men rise to the occasion and form a government of confederation. One that soon failed before a constitutional government solved the inherent problems of defining what really is a democracy. We're speaking now, friends, of a representative government, not really a democracy, was the result of all that. And then you see we get into this battle of the Electoral College and the Popular College. More on that in a moment. But I want to talk to you first about this mention of intelligent men, about America's good fortune. We often speak about the framers in such glory and vision and light when you see, well, this experiment they put together here called America, the United States of America. And I'll tell you more a little bit after why we are the United States of America and why that representative government was so important. Well, let's talk a moment about intelligent men. Well, just recently, you may see Senator John Kennedy out of Louisiana. He says, This country was founded by geniuses, but it's being run by a bunch of idiots. And no truer words have been spoken. Which brings us to this current day plight we find ourselves in, this pandemic. Let me go now to the National Review and read to you House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, the Speaker and Democrat out of California. Well, the National Review says she worked to scupper the Phase 3 coronavirus relief package after Majority Whip James Clyburn, you know, he was the guy who gave Biden the big hands up, remember there, yeah? In South Carolina, you recall? He's the one who endorsed him and really got his campaign going. Well, he told caucus members just the other day that the bill, this coronavirus bill, this third bill, this important bill that was to help Americans, that like, because this is a mandated government recession, and because nobody's working, and because the government has told them to stay home, and because they have to pay their light bill, and you know they have to put food on the table, and they have to raise their families, and those kinds of, you know, non-essentials, right? So this Majority Whip, James Clyburn, the Democrat again, out of South Carolina, he tells the caucus members that this bill, the one I just told you about, was a tremendous opportunity to restructure things to fit our vision. Well, I have to tell you, James Clyburn should be removed from Congress immediately, along with a whole host of other people. And hopefully, as we always talk about lessons learned, I just hope Americans are paying attention right now and they don't sweep this stuff under the carpet, because that is already seems to be happening. You're not really seeing the outrage from sea to shining sea that I thought you would see when I tell you what I'm telling you today. And when I get done with this next chapter, if you're not outraged, then you want to check your pulse a moment and see what's going on, because this is beyond anything I can describe to you what's going on. And the only recourse we have is to remove these people from office. And I can't believe if we can't get this message through and explain to their constituents what they're doing here, that they also wouldn't want them removed from office permanently. This is that bad. Don't you think? I mean, James Clyburn comes out and says, well, yeah, you know, and this is as they're trying to push this bill through quickly because the clock is ticking. And this is the bill that's going to help real people out there who, again, have had to succumb to this government-mandated recession because everything is closed tight from this pandemic, yeah? A tremendous opportunity to restructure things to fit our vision. So Clyburn wants to take the moment, the crisis, the panic, the idea of putting food on people's homes and on their tables and helping them out. And he wants to take that moment. And he wants to restructure things to fit our vision. And what the hell is his vision anyways? What is their vision? Now, remember, this is what he said on a call to a couple of hundred fellow Democrats. So they all know now where Clyburn wants to go. So Mitch McConnell comes out and he says, all of a sudden, and I quote, the Democrat leader and the Speaker of the House show up and we're back to square one. We're fiddling here, fiddling with the emotions of the American people, fiddling with the markets, fiddling with our health care. The American people expect us to act tomorrow, now. And I want everybody to fully understand if we aren't able to act, well, it'll be because of our colleagues on the other side continuing to dicker when the country expects us to come together and address this problem. They want to maintain their status quo, their idea, their vision of an America. So what is their vision? And what is it exactly that Clyburn is referring to fit into the vision and to take this bill and pork it up with whatever these projects are at a time of crisis. And I just can't imagine that every American is not standing tall now with the ears wide open and listening to this and then finding out who it is exactly did this. And no matter people, whether they have an R or a D or an I or a C after their name, that they should be removed from office at once. It doesn't matter what their political association is. They should be removed from office at once. Don't you agree with me? So let's get back to that bill, that relief bill that they've stopped now. And again, these bills are never simple. It was an 1,100 page bill. I think it's up to 1,400, 1,500. It grows. It's like a bad mold. It just grows and adds mold every day, every hour of every day. And it's just and they don't grow by just a few pages or a footnote. They grow by hundreds of pages and thousands of pages. And of course, then you get to the point where, you know, the famous words are said, well, you'll have to pass this so we can see what the hell is in the bill. You've got time to read a bill when you parked it all up with whatever you want in there, right? So just pass it through quickly in the dead of night, fast, and we'll let you know later what's in it. It's a hell of a way to do business now, isn't it? So all of these projects that they want to get in now to this life-threatening bill, this parachute for Americans, putting food on the table, paying the bills while we tell them to have social distancing and stay away from everybody and stay home and don't work and everything's closed. And you know, you've seen all the news reports. You know what's going on. So here's what they want to do. Here's what they want to put in that bill here. They want to provide $600 million in grants, evenly divided between the National Endowment for the Arts and Humanities, plus an additional $42.5 million for the Kennedy Center for the Smithsonian Institution. Because, of course, that's life-threatening. If we don't get that money to the Kennedy Center and the Smithsonian Institution, they may get the coronavirus up there, huh? That's life-threatening. And then elections. Oh, the House Democrats, they want this bill to include $4 billion in grants for states to conduct election audits, the implement vote by mail or vote by coffin or vote when you're dead in whatever way you have. Just vote. We'll vote when you jump over the border quickly, but vote. Well, anyways, they want $4 billion in grants to conduct these election audits and implement vote by mail, provide same day voter registration and accommodate extended early voting periods. Of course, we've already got so much early voting periods now. We just ought to just run it as soon as you end one election. Let's just start the next one. Right. And we can just have people vote again. Like we'll just start it maybe 3.5 years out. And we'll just give them all of that time to early vote. How's that sound, people? Good? Now, why do you think they want all those votes? Well, because they're losing middle America. They're losing you out there. They're losing real people. Well, because they're screwing around and they're dickering around with stuff like this. They're not worried about putting food on the table here, people. I mean, come on. Why do you think they want to stuff all this in there? This is how you have to win elections. You have to do these kinds of things. You see? Now you know why they don't want that border secured. Of course, you've known that all along, right? But if they had any confidence and ability to see their way through, they would be able to count on middle America. They'd be able to count on real American families and people who would stand up and vote their way, without a doubt. But they don't have that confidence, people, because they know. So that's why they've got to put pork in these bills. If they had any confidence, they'd do this in the light of day as its own separate bill. But they don't have that confidence, do they? Which is why you have to pork up a bill that's a lifeline for Americans. Is that clear to everybody? Whether you're a D, an R, an I, or a C? And the next thing is emissions oversight for airlines. So this is where we get into the whole Green New Deal. This is the early start of that now. So the House Democrats, they want to put in this, they want to require airlines to receive, and if the airlines are going to receive assistance, which, you know, they're going to need some sort of assistance because they'll all be bankrupt if not, and there'll be no There'll be no jets in the skies, I guess, you know. Not that I like these bailouts and these government-induced programs for private industry. I do not. But sometimes you have unprecedented circumstances, I would imagine. Perhaps this is one of those people where you have a pandemic and everybody's home and nobody's spending money. Might that be one of those times? I don't know. You tell me, right? So they want to offset their carbon emissions starting in 2025. They want to reduce the carbon emissions by 25% by 2035 and 50% by 2050. And airlines and ticket agents would be required to tell prospective purchasers the amount of carbon emissions attributed to their flight. So in other words, we scare the hell out of people as you get on the plane of how much. And that's, by the way, as the people who pass this get into their private jets, along with the Hollywood crowd there, and they suck up, you know, 100 times more the carbon emissions that they're worried about. Of course, carbon emissions are another tune for another day. And they want further restrictions on corporations receiving assistance. This is what they call slush money and, you know, lemonade money and funny money. And we hate businesses. We hate corporations. And the reason these people hate businesses and hate corporations is because they see a different utopia here, people. They're looking for a utopia run by the feds, by the government, where businesses just suck it up and they become the government's bitch. That's the kind of future they see. That's their utopia. So, of course, they want to restrict all of this. So what they're asking is that they want to require companies receiving any aid to maintain workforce levels, worker pay, minimum wages, provide 14 days of paid leave throughout the crisis for all employees by January 2021. They want that minimum wage in there by that date. They would be, and that's where all these small businesses go out of business because they can't afford it, clearly. I mean, we get it. And listen, we all start young at a job. And we get paid what we can. I mean, that's just the way it is in America. I mean, you remember making $1.70 an hour, $2.30 an hour, all right, $2.85. Remember the minimum wages back then? Some of that's before my time. Don't think that I'm that old. But you know what I'm talking about here. We've all worked when we've had those minimal wages and flipping hamburgers, sweeping floors. Now, what happens if there's a minimum wage that says you got to pay me $15? You're not going to hire me as a kid, that is, to do that job. Anyways, the whole thing becomes unraveled. And that's another conversation for another day as well. But again, this is the lineup of requirements they're putting in here. So they want to tell businesses what to do and how to do it, because this is what a utopia in a socialist environment looks like. This is their utopia. This is a socialist America. This is the road where, I mean, we have to connect the dots here, people, together. Pandemic or no pandemic. It doesn't stop these people, believe me. And then housing assistance. Well, they want the bill. They want to authorize $100 billion to help certain non-assisted renters cover rent and utility payments, provide $15.5 billion homeless assistance to state and local governments, prohibit evictions until 6 months after the end of the virus, the emergency declaration, establish a $35 billion housing assistance fund to help homeowners with mortgage and utility payments, and prohibit foreclosures and require mortgage forbearance for 1 year. And, you know, there may be some things in there they'll negotiate, and that's fine. I mean, some of those things may be things, maybe reasonable ideas to come together as a group, the housing assistance part of it, you see? And there could be. There could very well be. But, you know, the key here is you got to do it quickly. You can't dicker around with all this other stuff, you see? Which brings me to the point of they want Postal Service bailout. So, you know, that Postal Service that we talk about every so many years when the debt comes up, and which is a whole other conversation too, because all of this, these dollars we're talking about, this funny money, is going to add to the debt like you've never seen before. Keep that in mind as well. All of this pandemic money, monopoly money, goes toward bankrupting the country more and more. I'm not saying you don't do this. The point is we should be in a better position, and we're not in a better position because we haven't done any house cleaning and we haven't kept our own house in order in Washington, D.C. with the debts and the way they run the business up there, which puts us in a very precarious position right this very moment. You see what I mean? what we've been talking about, the debt that nobody's talking about. All of this is going to put us in an unbelievable position. I don't know what it will look like by the time Trump leaves office at this rate with these dollars. And unless they really pull back the curtain and pull down spending and cut all of these porked programs out, which they're not going to, they're bankrupting America. The next big conversation we're going to be having, people, is the fact there is, if the pandemic doesn't kill us all, the fact that we'll be busted, broken in bankruptcy will do the job for us. And that's what you'll leave to your grandkids. Make no mistake about it. So you don't have to worry about the pandemic at that point. We'll be a third world country real fast. The money does run out. I know a lot of you out there don't think so. I got news for you. As we continue to become China's bitch. So they want a Postal Service bailout. We've been bailing out the Postal Service forever. I'd like to see us just do away with the Postal Service and just electronic mail or whatever. Just, we don't need this rubbish. The debt that the Post Service carries, which, by the way, is not a government agency. They're a separate business, but we bail them out anyway. So we need to be done with the Post Service. They can't figure out their own solvency or pay their bills and walk and tie their shoelaces themselves. To hell with them. We don't need it. Keep your mail. We'll find another way to do it. And so this relief bill, they want to provide $25 billion to offset the post office's lost revenue and reset. They lose revenue on an hourly basis, people. This is the most ridiculously run organization on the planet. It's unconscionable what's going on here with the Postal Service for years, all adding to our debt. They want to, they want to temporarily ban stock buybacks for all companies during the duration, and that's a point that everybody will probably come together on. We understand that, you know, they corporations and people should not be screwing around here and getting rich off the American people. We all should be able to understand that. But they also have a student loan forgiveness here. So they want to get into peeling back the money and the student loans and free education and the free healthcare. So what they've done here is they've got a new Green Deal going, right, on top of a bill that is needed immediately, which is lined with pork here entirely. And now you see this is what their vision is. So back to what Clyburn puts out there, he had this great idea. Just a week or so ago here, when he had those couple hundred Democrats on the line. And his fabulous idea was to take the bill. A tremendous opportunity, was his words, to restructure things to fit our vision. Our vision. And what's our vision? Well, I just told you what their vision is. And that's their vision. And so now that's where they're at as they continue fighting. But the whole thing... Let's not lose sight, people, of what's really important here. Please, let's not lose sight. I just came through a litany list of pork projects that they've stuck in a lifeline bill, a coronavirus bill to help families out in small businesses. And now you've just heard all these projects that they want to put in this bill to delay it all. They knew the Republicans, conservatives weren't going to go along with this garbage. They knew that. But again, these people do things in the midst of night, and they've tried to convince people not to read the bills. I mean, that's been going on for years now, in the hopes that, you know, these politicians will do what Pelosi suggests and just pass it and read it later. I mean, that's got to be the only thing they're hoping for. They certainly can't be hoping that these people are going to read the bills, that conservatives are going to read the bills. And then what happens? And we're at where we're at. And then we've got a stalemate. Or maybe that's what they want. Maybe they want a stalemate. Maybe they really don't want to help the families out, I guess. I don't know what it is. You tell me what you think it is. But it's pretty sick. Let's not lose sight of what they've done here, about the vision they're trying to push through right now, and what Clyburn is suggesting, and in fact that the Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, who is on her last days, by the way, as a Speaker, thank God, I am certain the American people are not going to reelect her, and certainly her party will throw her overboard as well. She's become used up material real quick. It's going to be interesting to see what happens after the election, I will tell you, as far as that goes. So now you know, and we've got to drive the point home. What I don't want to be lost on anybody right now as we continue this conversation today is not to push what we've just talked about under the carpet. We need everybody to understand the consequences of the vision that Clyburn has suggested and the park they've just put in, this lifeline bill for Americans that is designed to help families out and real people out in a means of crisis who cannot work, who have are because it's a government-mandated recession that's happening here. And now this is kind of, and why would they do that? Because people, they don't really care about those families. Is that not clear to everybody? That you don't take and push your park into a project, a bill like this that is so critical, so important, and crucial for life. For these families and small businesses to survive this pandemic and this government-mandated recession. Why would they do this? What would be the possible reason? It makes no sense. It rattles the mind. It's your news and entertainment network. News blogs, informative podcasts, entertaining videos, or listen to 24/7 talk radio on our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. We the People, AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Hello, this is Lieutenant Randy Sutton, the host of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement. I am a 34-year police veteran. I am also the founder and CEO of an organization that stands behind injured and disabled law enforcement officers. It is called The Wounded Blue. Our website is thewoundedblue.org. We have produced a film. It is an important film. I urge you to watch it. The film details what happens when a police officer or law enforcement officer is shot or stabbed or beaten or disabled, seriously injured in the line of duty. Most people think they are taken care of medically and financially. The reality may be quite different. It is called The Wounded Blue, Service, Sacrifice, Betrayed. The film is available on Amazon, iTunes, and the Microsoft Store.
What if a new treatment, backed by 17,000 scientific articles, was proven to extend our lifespan, protect against terrible diseases like cancer, heart disease, and dementia, make us more attractive and thinner, feel calmer and happier, and boost energy levels, memory, and performance? What would you pay for even the smallest dose of this treatment? The good news is you don't have to pay anything, because these are just some of the benefits of a full night of quality sleep. If you're one of the millions of Americans who need better quality sleep, the time to change is now. Until now, most sleep aids haven't worked, but a new, easy-to-swallow sleep gel, invented by the leading nutrition company, Healthy Cell, is designed to support all four stages of human sleep to help you fall asleep, stay asleep, sleep deep, and wake up refreshed. It's called REM Sleep. To get a free two-night supply of REM Sleep, visit healthycell.com/sleep. That's healthy, CELL.com/sleep.
Our global experts are brilliant writers and engaging hosts on a mission of a lifetime. You'll find the latest news and inspiration on the front page of AmericaOutloud.com.
You know, it was America's good fortune to have really far-seeing, intelligent men rise to the occasion and form a government of confederation. One that soon failed before a constitutional government solved the inherent problems of defining what really is a democracy. Representative government, not a democracy, was the result. I read that to you just a bit earlier, before the pause, people. You know, we see the ongoing disputes today, the arguments, the debates of the Electoral College, and the cries to remove it at once and go with a popular vote. Because slowly but surely, they've taken over our urban cities, and they're being rotted away from the inside out as the once great American cities are now on a decline in a record pace like we've never seen before in the history of the United States of America. And these coastal communities of New York and California that are littered with socialists, leftists, Democrats who just have a different vision for what this America is, they're looking for an Americazuela. That's what they want, an Amerizuela. And you have to remember, over the last 50 years, they've heavily indoctrinated. They've brainwashed the people that they need government. They need government to hold their hands, to enrich the few at the expense of the many. And at that point, people, if we followed their game plan, we'd be forced to rename the nation the un-United States of America. Or maybe we just keep it simpler, shorter, sweeter, and we call it Amerizuela. What do you think? Because if we're going to let just the few in the coastal cities determine an election, that was never the vision of the framers. There were 50 states. The reason they called this the United States of America is because the states were united. There were 50 states. We grew to be 50 states. And if we were going to remain the United States of America, then you have to have, everybody has to have a vote. Well, the framers were brilliant to figure that out early on. And they understood that representative government would be the way to pull that off. That's the Electoral College. So every state, they have their Electoral College, and they vote to who they want to win the election, and all those people come together, and it's real simple, the process. And we have a winner. And that winner is chosen. It's via the channel of the United States of America, the Unite. So we're united, and this is what we're thinking. This is what our people, this is what our constituents decided in Montana, or in Arizona, or in New York, Georgia, wherever it is, this is what they decided. And the Electoral College would speak for the people there because that's what the vote said. So the vote within the state would be, sure, a popular vote. You can have the popular vote within the state, no problem. We can give you that. But then all bets are off after that, if you're going to remain the United States of America. Now, why doesn't the left get that point? They did for quite a while until they indoctrinated these urban cities and screwed them up, you see. And now it's a catastrophe. Now they want what they want because they see the light at the end of the tunnel. And they see their light at their end of the tunnel is the train that is coming fast. That's the America they're looking for, the Amerizuela, the un-United States of America. See, that's in simple man's terms, that's exactly what this whole Electoral College, Popular College business is about. It's the same thing why they want to pork up that bill I just told you about and put in all the election things. Vote by mail. Vote by your coffin. Just vote. Vote if you're illegal. You don't need an ID. Just you, maybe even an oxygen tank. You don't even need that. Just vote. And we'll take care of all your stuff. We'll take care of your health, your education, your stuff, your food, long as you follow what we want, and you'll be our bitch, right? Then you wonder, some of the people we know, some of the left people, you know, we all have friends that are on the left. You wonder, what are they thinking? What are they smoking? What are they on? What are these people thinking? Well, let's get back to our American story. So at this point, back to that representative government, in looking at our American story, back to where we were, a government of confederation. It became a constitutional government. The framers were these, I got to tell you, these were some of the most brilliant men to walk the planet, bar none. And we were just blessed to have them here at that moment of time when they pulled away from the king, right? We were just blessed to have them here. I mean, just think if it was a bunch of socialists who had formed here, what the hell kind of program we'd have here today in the United States? Just think about what that looked like. If they were a bunch of socialists and the way they think today, if those were the ones that formed the government, you know, said, yeah, we want to create our own monarchy here. We want to create our own oppressive government. We want to remain the kings. We want you people to be our servants. Well, time passed, people, not without its problems. And problems like whiskey taxes, unpaid soldiers rebelling, tariffs on incoming goods, relations between the newly franchised 13 independent states. I mean, you know, this was a new experiment, keep in mind. And the routine of daily life went on. The idea of a unified country with a central government prevailed. That kind of became the status quo. That was the vision. It was a constitutional government. Now, listen, not everybody agreed with that. There was no unity then because that idea assumed everyone wanted the same things and the same ideas or the same thoughts, and they did not. You know, force and a will that does not exist ends up requiring one's interest to use force against all other competing interest. The geniuses of our Constitution recognize that those competing interests, the original 13 states, at least had to recognize each other and work together. Well, it was the new America. It was the new America of states, the United States. They did have a common ground upon which to agree. It was called the Constitution. But today, friends, we see that being challenged every hour of every day. It's a common ground that is no longer that common amongst the socialist Democrats. Now, back then, once the British were gone and the treaties with the Indian nations beyond the Alleghenies were null and void, and Americans started their migration west into the new territories, right? Taking the independent American spirit with them, because the American spirit has always been there. It's vibrant. It's that patriotic feel. It's that. See, that's the power of America. That's the power you can't replace that. You can't reduplicate that anywhere on the planet. It's a beautiful thing. It's what this experiment is. It's what I get goosebumps all over about. It's what this experiment is all about. I love it. And I understand the framers. I understand these people. I understand their thinking. I understand their vision. Maybe I was born in the wrong era. Well, at that time, friends, America's western border ended at the Mississippi River. That was the dividing line. What lay beyond that was really unknown. It was a vast expanse of grass. At the time, herds of shaggy beasts and wild Indians. You know, what was unseen beyond the flat horizon there, really didn't know. At the time, they didn't know if it was the property of Spain or France or whoever, whatever. It certainly wasn't England's, they knew that. But who would dare to go there? Well, at a simple stroke, America's size doubled with the 1803 Louisiana Purchase. And American feet headed west. Now, could a direct river connection to the Pacific Ocean be found? Well, that had to be determined, people. That and many other questions were answered in due time, giving America a vast expanse of rich resources of fur, timber, minerals, and agriculture. Now imagine if our early patriots didn't have that spirit. What if they didn't go west? What if we gave up? What if we didn't purchase the 1803? We'd be looking at a whole different America today. And what if they didn't fight for a constitutional government? And what if they were a bunch of damn socialists? A lot of what is there? What isn't there now? Huh? You know, there was no status quo, though. They wanted more. Either you went brave in the dangers and hardships, or you stayed put and helped grow your own town and state. And some people did. And that's how America grew. New states were coming online. There were a lot of new people being born. The country was growing up. Of course, a lot of this, there were questions still. We had the question of bondage of other human beings. That was a big issue, and that issue precipitated a bloody civil war and an industrial revolution. Still, there was no status quo. We weren't happy being just another country, being a nothing. We wanted more. Well, laws were made against theft and murder, enforcement of them, and most other piecemeal with tough men paid to tame the towns and territories by force if necessary. Territorial judges were appointed by a growing central federal government to execute the laws according to the needs of proper society. Well, listen, even the ancient Romans had a term for the absence of law enforcement. I mean, you've got to have some control. If you're going to have a law-abiding society or a civil society, you've got to have law enforcement. Now, in recent years, we've seen the left try to do away with that. They see a different America again. But the ancient Romans, sure, they called it finis terminus equitis, or frontier justice. It was an American spirit that has quickly died away now and with the coming of organized law and order. Now protected by the expanse of two oceans, Americans now felt safe and secure in their isolation. And that's when the comfort of the status quo set in. And America's Industrial Revolution got underway. Then came the Spanish-American War, followed by two world wars. That changed everything. Korea, Vietnam, and America was growing up fast. And then the safety of isolation was gone. But the new political status quo had to be defended. Well, sure, contending political ideas imposed upon other nations beyond our shores replaced the monarchies with collectivism and federalism with fascism. Where does it end? Well, America, again, we find ourselves in a turbulent period of time. This time, it's a push to impose a new status quo, one that eliminates the nation state for the good of a world on the very cusp of destruction by rising seas and growing temperatures, global warming, allegedly caused by excess carbon and CO2 emissions from man's advancement into the world of growing industry and technology. And now they want to turn the clock back. They want to go back to the early 19th century. Well, to achieve this utopia free from evils of industry, America must suborn itself to the collective will of our intellectual betters. It's all about the betters who know better than us. Well, American and non-American alike, friends, we call this globalism. I've spent a lot of talk over the last many years, globalists, as we've been seeing a lot of repositioning in America. You start to see the vision here that Clyburn was pointing out. What kind of a vision does the socialist left have? Because now we're using the word socialist and socialism. It's in our vocabulary. It's not hidden anymore. And there's a good stake of that in the Democrat Party, because the Democrat Party, as we knew it, is long gone. They are dead. You see the divide between the parties now and what's happened. It is an eye-opener when you see how the socialists, how they've taken over, and you see this whole new group. And then you've got the problem of this new world order of Muslims getting into Congress. And there's a record amount of Muslims running for the next Congress, by the way, in 2020. What will America do then? So this experiment of electing the first few Muslims, you know, has that experiment worked out for you all? How will America react to that? Because you've got a lot more now coming behind them as these people want to filter into our government system, because they realize the best way to change America is to change it from within. That is the only way to change America. you're not going to change America from a foreign force. You're going to have to do it from within. So the socialist left, they understand the game here. Nancy Pelosi understands it. Clyburn understands the game. We know what their end game is, people. We know what the AOCs and the squad and all of the, what they're after. That's their new vision of America. It's their utopia. It's what they're looking for a country. So this pandemic isn't going to stop them. Clearly, you see, when they load the bill and they pork it up and Clyburn says, yeah, let's pull up our vision. And Pelosi says, you people can wait. You can wait. We're not going to worry about the food on your table. We're not going to worry about the families. We're going to pork up the bill. We're going to put all our pet projects in there. And while everybody waits. And what are they going to wait for? And what are families and small businesses going to do in the meantime as the government demands, as states are closing and as the country deals with a pandemic, which then, you know, you divide that and the whole globalist movement. And China's part of all of this. China's part of this. We've been talking about China now for some years, you know, a lot of years. We've been talking about China. And here we are. I mean, the fact that they're doing all the manufacturing, and this is what Trump talked about back in 2015. And, you know, it was prophetic, and most Americans didn't realize the things that President Trump was talking about would become so crucial to America's future and our survival. Most everybody didn't realize back then how important, think about that in those terms, how prophetic Trump was and is. Where does this man come from? Why is he here? Why did he get such massive support with the evangelicals in America? Why did the Christian community stand up like taller than we've ever seen them stand up before a candidate for president and say, you know, this is the man we want. Now, this is a man they've tried to pull down with all of the, you know, Stormy Daniels and the womanizing and the grabbing people by their parts and all that was all of that, where the media just took that and torched that all up. And, you know, that's where we try to make the perfect man to run for president, the perfect man, you must walk on water. We're looking for the perfect man or woman. Man is just said as humanity, as man, you know, being humankind, mankind. You got to say that today because you're torn apart and torn a new one if you don't, you know, you'd be discriminatory. You're racist bastard, right? So, right, that was the concept of that, people. It's so easy to digress, isn't it, here? You have to digress constantly as you have these conversations because there are so many side roads as you talk about America's story. And again, the plight of where we find ourselves in this pandemic. And really the question is, what kind of an America do we want on the other side of this pandemic is really the profound question I'm asking myself today and I'm asking you. Because we have a tendency to push a lot of this under the carpet and we have short memories in America and we forget the pain factor in America and we move forward quickly. We don't hold the socialist left accountable. And conservatives are an easy target, they're an easy date, and they lie down and they let them, as they've done with so many things, that they have the megaphone to America. And now you see the position we're in, and I'm just trying to suggest to you that we need to wake up a moment here. And I'm trying to suggest to you that, you know, again, yeah, we've got to wake up and conservatives have to wake up, but Americans have to wake up, patriots have to wake up, independents and middle America has to wake up. And by golly, I see every day that a lot of those people are waking up. I see the messages out there. I see what people are saying. They're leaving. I do believe they're leaving the Socialist Democrat Party in droves. So what does that mean for the next election? Well, you do the math, people. It should mean plenty, but nothing should ever be taken for granted. We should never lose sight of that. We're in the fight of our lives. We should never lose sight of the importance of this experiment, the United states of America. You look at, again, the intelligent people that I just love, absolutely love what Senator John Kennedy put out there. And you have to love John Kennedy because he's a man of the people. He speaks our language. He speaks very simple English language, and he puts it out there in a way that we can understand. We're simple people. We don't require 10-syllable words. Just give it to us straight, John. And he does. I wish a lot more senators spoke like John Kennedy. He says this country was founded by geniuses. Yeah. Intelligent men, we said, yeah. But it's being run by a bunch of idiots. Well, yeah. And that was the vision. And what he's referring to is what Clyburn is trying to do at a very crucial moment to families and businesses here. The socialist left knows that their days are numbered. They know that the clock is ticking. So when you really understand what their motive is and you understand the extreme measures they're taking, and you sometimes can't rationalize all that, and a lot of Democrats will write into us or they'll talk and they'll say, but, you know, we don't understand. We don't understand why they want to give illegals more rights. We don't understand why they want sanctuary cities and they want to, you know, damn the residents and the taxpayers. We don't understand. Well, of course they don't understand. How can anybody understand? The only thing to understand is that the left knows that that's where their future votes are coming from. Why do you think they want to redo the voter rolls? Why do you think they want people to vote from the coffin and vote by mail and vote however you got to vote, just vote? They want people at the lowest possible denominator who maybe don't think for themselves. And I don't want that to come across wrong. I'm not trying to be smart or smug here. But people who, you know, they're okay to sit in the chair on the roller coaster and have the roller coaster rider keep jerking them around as you begin to vomit all over the place because you're sick to your stomach. And the roller coaster operator there sits there with that little, you know, handle in his hand there, like a drive, like a car. And he takes the drive and he's back and forth and you're on the roller coaster and he's controlling your ride and you're getting sick as hell and you're vomiting all over the place. And he just you can just see that. It's back and forth and I see him jerking that little drive back and forth and we're like this and we're sick. We're sick as hell, but they have the controls. And it's their game, and we're just, again, we're their suckers. That's their vision of an America. That's an Amerizuela, or the ununited states of America. It's a pretty sick vision, people. It's not at all what the framers had in mind. So how hard can it be to get to our fellow Americans here? I mean, the rallying call and the action from this conversation has to be, pandemic or no pandemic, people, the stakes are high. How do we get to those people? Do we want to go where the socialist left wants to take us? People, it's a whole new world. It's a world of nukes and viruses. That's what I see here. It's a world of nukes and viruses. Biochemical weapons being released on people, on humanity. And Americans they can't sit idle by this. They're not exempt. You want your globalist environment? You got it. But then you got to suck down those viruses as well. And you got to suck down the evil. Whether it's the Middle East or whether it's China or wherever it's from, or the far reaches of evil on the planet. That's the globalist environment they want. Keep the walls down and let the evil in. And as long as they vote and we have our power, we're good with that. Screw you, we're good with that. We are facing a grown American revolution. Once again here, people. And maybe it's not black powder muskets this time. But the next revolution will never survive the terrible weaponry that every country has in their arsenals now. Not as simple as it was back then in the American Revolution. This next revolution is going to hurt like hell. Friends, the status quo is fragile and ever-changing. And I say it to you today, America's history is far too important to be rewritten or ignored by people who never learned it. Friends, it's our job to protect it. And it's our job to stand up and defend America and bring it back to those framers. That's the vision we've got to fight for. Status quo, only when it refers and we defer to the Constitution, hell yes. The rest of it, no way. It's a vision we need to fight for. It is the next revolution here in America. And we're in a battle of our lifetimes. So, what kind of an America do we want on the other side of the pandemic? Ask yourself that question as we're in this moment of time. The perfect moment and the perfect time to ask the big questions is when we're down and out, is when we have to step back from the real world a moment. And we can now look at the world at 35,000 feet. Friends, I'm here to tell you we have a tremendous opportunity right this very moment of time. We have a tremendous opportunity on our hands right now to redefine what America looks like right after we get to the other side of this pandemic. What kind of an America do you want? I'll tell you what kind of an America I want. And we'll talk more about that tomorrow in part two of this conversation with a very distinguished panel. And we'll ask some really unique Americans what kind of an America they want, what kind of an America they see as we get to the other side of this pandemic. It's time, friends, to get involved and get loud.